Hi, and welcome to The Reading Revolution. I'm your host, Josh Gregory. No matter where we are, our lives affect children. And in today's episode, we're talking with an organization here in Western New York that is doing just that. In fact, their name says it all. Every Person Influences Children. Executive Director of EPIC, Tara Burgess, is my guest. The Reading Revolution starts now. Are you ready to embark on an adventure through the world of words? Join us on The Reading Revolution and let's explore the exciting world of literacy together. Tara, welcome to The Reading Revolution. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
So if we could start off, you know, with a little bit about your background and where you've been here in the Western New York community, and then we can roll into how you became involved with EPIC.
Sure. So I started with EPIC in January of 2012. I came in as the executive assistant to the person who was the president then and the office manager. And over the next several years, I grew into new positions, expanded, moved into kind of a finance and HR role. Then I moved into a programmatic role and became the chief program officer in 2017. And then in 2018, the person who was the president at that point announced she was leaving, so I threw my hat in the ring for the lead position. And in June of 2018, I started as the executive director. So it's been a really nice journey to be able to kind of walk through all of the different things that EPIC does, all of the things that it takes to run a nonprofit organization, and then be able to kind of step in and take the lead of an organization with a really great mission.
And that's got to actually make it a little bit easier on an executive director at knowing the ins and outs of that organization instead of coming in cold and wondering, oh, the change is going to be accepted, that sort of thing. So that's kind of a nice way to ramp into the position that you're in now.
Absolutely. It takes away some of the learning curve. So
And knowing all the ins and outs, as I kind of mentioned, where it's you kind of have a better idea of what's happening when you start somewhere and then move to the top rather than having to come in right. And look down and say, how are they actually operating?
You have a lot of historical perspective that you wouldn't necessarily coming right. In fresh. So
tell us a little bit about EPIC, a little bit of history, how it became to be where it is today.
Sure. So we've been around for 44 years. We were started in 1980 by a gentleman by the name of Robert Wilson. And Mr. Wilson's wife was tragically murdered in 1977 by a young man who had lived in their neighborhood in foster care. And Mr. Wilson did something that I don't know that everyone would be capable of doing. He had a lot of empathy for the young child who did this to his wife. He started investigating the young man's life and found out that he lived in 11 foster homes during the 15 years of his life. Mr. Wilson felt like, there were things that we could do as a society to change what could happen for families in the future and to avoid tragedies like his own. So he partnered with a number of individuals in the community, including Sandy Rifkin, who at the time they were on the Erie County Child Abuse Task Force, and they started the organization in 1980 with a couple of desks at the United Way. And, we've grown into an organization now that provides programs across the three primary counties of Western New York, of Niagara County, Erie County, and Cattaraugus County. And then we have an office in Monticello, New York. And then we provide programming that we sell and different opportunities that we provide really nationally.
So with their original vision, did they think it was going to expand as much as it has, or were they really focused on a couple of different topics that families are most affected by?
Yeah, so I think originally, really, the primary goal of kind of eradicating child abuse and neglect was first and foremost, but I think it became pretty clear very early on that just preventing or just supporting a family when child abuse has happened is probably not the best, way to approach it. Really, the best way is to make sure that parents have skills before they even make it to that stage, right? So raising children to be academically successful, to be socially successful, to have all of those kind of developmental skills in place, making sure that parents have those skills from the day baby's born and comes home from the hospital, and not waiting until, a tragedy occurs.
So how did they actually get the word out, so to speak, to let everyone in the Western New York community that they were starting this organization and that you know, basically virtually anyone in the area could benefit from it.
So Mr. Wilson, and I never had the pleasure of meeting him. He passed away before I, you know, came on board with the organization. But I've heard stories of the things that he used to do. He used to sit in legislators' lobbies and wait for them to leave for the end of the day if he couldn't get a meeting on their schedule. He would, you know, go door to door to school districts and superintendents, really just reaching out until he was able to get in touch with somebody who would listen and, you know, really kind of take an interest in what Mr. Wilson was trying to do with the community. And they used a lot of volunteers, a lot of parents who understand the struggle of parenting to, you know, really talk about the programs, to implement the programs, and really just to support families in the community.
When you're talking about the outreach to schools, let's expand a little bit about that and the involvement that EPIC has with the educational system that we have here in the area.
So we are involved. So historically, we've been involved in a number of schools across New York State. When the Parent Information Resource Centers were a funded opportunity through the federal government, EPIC actually had the largest PERC funding, is what it was called, and we had 14 locations across New York State. Unfortunately, that program was defunded by the federal government in 2011. So we kind of, you know, closed many of the offices across the state, really kind of came back to our core here in Western New York to really try and, you know, hone in on what it is we do around service delivery. So, you know, as a part of that and a part of the continuing work, we work with school districts to do a couple of things. We partner with them to provide different workshops and programs. So our Ready, Set, Read program, our Triple P program, our Storytime programs. And then we really do a lot of work with the professionals as well. So we have a line of professional development opportunities. We do poverty simulators. We do differentiated family engagement. Just like we do differentiated, you know, education for students, families have different needs and families have, you know, different backgrounds and values that they're bringing to the education system. So how do we work with families, particularly those who feel like they're kind of the most hard to reach? We do a lot of work around conflict resolution, communication skills, understanding cultural values. So, you know, we really work as a partner between the school districts and the families. We like to be that kind of neutral party that kind of sees things from all of the different perspectives, right? Teachers work so hard. They work tirelessly to educate a classroom of 20, 25, 30, 35 students. You know, it probably feels like their days never end. And then you look at families, right? And families have that kind of flip side, right? They may only have one or two or three or four kids. And those are the most important people in their lives. And they look at things from kind of two different perspectives. We always like to be able to share. So this is what it might look like to be a classroom teacher. And this is what it might look like to be a parent. And how do we kind of reconcile and understand that we're all here to be part of that village, to raise that child? And then we, you know, at EPIC, we believe that we know and recognize and strongly support that literacy and education doesn't start at 5 years old when they enter the school system or four when they enter it at pre-K. You know, literacy, education, all of that begins day one. So the things that mom, that dad, that grandma, that auntie or uncle or siblings or any type of caregivers do, all of those pieces are the key components that really make for educational success. The brain does the most amount of development from birth to 3 years old. So all of the people who are involved with the child for those foundational years are so important. So we do a lot of work in the child care space and in that kind of early learning space.
And I think it's wonderful that you're developing these partnerships with the educators who may not have the same expertise or the same skill sets that you're bringing to the table and allowing your experts to share their knowledge with them so that the burden isn't totally on them and they can rely on crucial data that is proven that this is exactly what's happening to these kids when they're not in the walls of this school.
Absolutely. You know, teachers have a hard job and their job is to educate children. And so many children come to school with so many things other than just a need for educational learning, right? They have all sorts of, challenges with social determinants of health, right? Having proper nutrition, having, a safe environment to live and to learn and to grow. Mental health challenges among, children and their parents have increased significantly. Poverty is such a huge issue. If you can't afford to provide, healthy food and nutrition for your child, you don't know where you're sleeping tonight. All of those things, a parent's not checking the backpack if they don't know where they're sleeping tonight, if they've got two jobs just to make ends meet. Affording childcare, right? Who's watching my child today? I can't afford childcare. So, I'm leaving my child with friends and family members, and it's never the same place twice so that I can go to work. All of those things interfere with the educational, learning that a teacher's trying to do in the classroom, which is their job. There's needs on both sides, and really trying to kind of come to that basic understanding of who can provide what, right? Because sometimes we can't provide everything for our child. So where are those priorities for the mom or for the dad? And what are ways that the school can really just ask the parents to do some of the very basic things that support also some of those higher needs?
As I mentioned in our conversations prior to us sitting down, was when I had first met someone from Epic. We happened to be at an educational conference. They had a booth right across from our booth, and I was really intrigued. Shout out to Lisa Casper. She can get famous with us. I was intrigued by the reading programs, and that's why I said, "Boy, this is what we do. Let's have Epic come in and talk a little bit about, the reading programs. If you could tell us a little bit about the two that you have going on, and explain a little bit what that program's like."
Sure. So our first program is Storytime, and that's the first program that families have experience with Epic. Currently, we provide that in a couple of different locations, but our biggest one is probably down at Canalside. So we're there every Wednesday in the summer from 10:30 to 11:30. And that program really involves a couple of things. We have a guest reader who reads a story. I got to read the story about gardening this year, which was really fun. And then we have a couple of our partners present, and we do a couple of different sessions. So we read the book, we do an activity, there's an art and arts and craft piece. The Buffalo Science Museum comes in and does an activity with the students. We've got partners that do movement, and it's all tied around the theme of the book of the day. So, mine was a book on gardening, so the kids got to plant little pots, pots with a flower.
Yeah.
And they did activities growing like a tree and, all of those basic kind of components for building literacy skills. It's a lot of fun. And then, we offer that. We provide story time on the east side. We're doing it at the Y, and we're doing it in Salamanca. We do some story times up in Lockport at our Lockport office, our location up there. So those are really fun programs. Parents come. Kids get to move around a lot. They get tired.
How important is that?
They like to take a nap afterwards, maybe. It really kind of gets people engaged with Epic and to know the kinds of things that we do. And from there, we hope that they then join us for our Ready, Set, Read program, which is a really, really fun, exciting program. We offer it in three ways. We offer it in our learning management system. We offer it virtually. And then we offer it in our favorite version, which is in person. And that program, we invite families to bring their children with them. So Ready, Set, Read is designed really to teach families how to teach their children how to read. And that happens regardless of the family's literacy level. So if, the parent or the caregiver doesn't necessarily have a great literacy level, it doesn't matter. You can still build a child's literacy skills. So that's a 5-session program. When we do it in person, the children do are in a room with facilitators, children facilitators, And they do a number of centers that revolve around the topics that the families will be learning about. And then the parents are in a separate space for an hour learning the topics around the curriculum. So we talk about things like brain development and learning styles, how to understand how your child learns to read, how to learn to read through play, really learning all of those components that it takes to read that are really not not that difficult, but you wouldn't necessarily know that they're things that you're doing to teach your kid to read. And then the parents and the children come back together for the last 30 minutes. And we do modeling and you know, answer questions, provide support for families on how is this working? I don't know how to do this. Can you give me some support? When we do it through Thinkific, we have two different versions. So you can read the curriculum and the content, and then there's little checkpoints along the way to make sure that you understand the delivery. And then we also offer that in an auditory file so that if you can't read, you can listen to the content of the curriculum. And we also offer that in Spanish. So that's a really nice opportunity for families to really understand and learn how to teach their children how to read.
Now, that expansion with the Spanish version of this, are you seeing an increasing need for more than just English being the main language being used?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So we've had a lot of people ask if we have the curriculum in Spanish, which is what prompted us to really put that in our learning management system. And I will say we couldn't have done that without the support of Rich Products, who are huge community supporters. And, you know, really, really were our partner walking through this process of putting this into Spanish. So
how many folks and families do you work with on an annual basis? Are they repeat? I don't want to use the word customers, but I mean, are families that continue to come back for this service and other services? What's the scope of the audience that you have?
Yeah, so we impact about somewhere between 10 and 12,000 people a year. So in addition to the literacy programs that we offer and the family engagement opportunities that we offer in school districts, we do offer parenting programs. And so we have a couple of parenting programs, our Families in Transition program and then our Triple P program. They're both designed to provide varying levels of support for families. And the workshops that we provide are really facilitation-based, right? So it's a little bit of a stigma to parenting education. But I can tell you, I raised my kids a long time ago, but when I raised my children, there were lots of places that I got information from. It doesn't come naturally. Parenting is not something that you're just born with those skills and know how to do. And with our facilitation model, we really rely on each other as parents to provide different solutions and tools. What worked for me with one of my children, I can tell you didn't work probably for the next child. And the same thing happens, you know, out in the community. What works for me may not work for you and your children, or it might be just the thing that you need, right? So when we do our workshop programs, we use a lot of information and skills and experiences that come from the people around the table at the workshop. So we utilize that for our parenting programs. And then we have a couple of youth programs that we do. So our Strong African American Families program is a youth program designed to support youth between the ages of 10 and 14 and their caregivers. And it's really, really the hope is that they will avoid risky behaviors after taking the program and develop racial pride. And then we have our Just for Teens Just for Me and Just for Teens program. So the Just for Me portion of that is really a kind of selfhood journey, right, around how to make commitments, how to understand the difference between wants and needs, how to develop relationships and how to get what you want out of a relationship. And then the Just for Teens portion is that Just for Me curriculum with parenting thrown in. So that program is really geared towards our pregnant and parenting moms and dads. So, you know, when you kind of put all of those pieces together, the work that we're doing with the school system and the child care providers, the work that we're doing with parents and caregivers, and the work that we're doing with youth, really our goal is to, you know, help families and the community really to raise children to be, you know, successful.
You know, as a lifelong learner, I would like to say that I am and believe that I am. I've always been fascinated by the idea that kids are going to learn things in school. That's where you learn your math, science, and that sort of thing. But oftentimes, the life skills are overlooked. You just mentioned parenting. Not an easy thing. I have a five-year-old, and I know how difficult five-year-olds are. And there just seems to be this stigma, or not a stigma, but this air of, I got this. I know how to raise kids. I know what I'm doing. And the truth is that, you know, obviously you're living proof of you might not know everything. And it, sometimes it's better to ask for help than to just wing it on your own.
Yeah. I think, you know, parenting is one of those things where you probably saw some good things that came from your own upbringing or, you know, friends or family watching the way others are raised. And we pull some not so great things, right? My children, so I have three grandchildren, and I'm sure that they have learned some of the things that I didn't do well and took it with them into their parenting journey. And they learned from the things that you know, my husband and I did do well and are taking that into their parenting journey. What we do is not, we don't teach you how to be a parent, mm-hmm. right? There people say there's no handbook.
Right. Can you really do that? Right. Yeah. But there's no answer to that.
Actually, you can get a book if you come to Epic and you take one of our programs. So just so you know, but you know, we don't claim to have all of the answers. Mm-hmm. We know we don't have all of the answers, but what we do is provide different strategies, right? Different options. We might provide a strategy for you that doesn't work on Tuesday, but you do it again on Wednesday and it may work. It may work with the next child that you have. It's just having a number of different ways, a number of different tools in your toolkit to pull out and use during different situations. I sit in on parenting workshops. I've facilitated a number of parenting workshops. Even when I facilitate a workshop, every time I take away something that I take home, and my children are grown, I still am learning things from the parenting workshops. Just in general, how to have, you know, healthy relationships, how to have, you know, healthy relationships with my adult children. So it's really all about building up the skills that you know, parents and caregivers have. But we don't know everything. And you have to take all of the different options that we provide and that the facilitated group provides, and use what fits with your values, what fits with your background, what fits for that one particular moment. So I will definitely say that people who take our programs, our workshops, definitely walk away with something positive.
Do you see families maybe signing up and working through one program, learning about another, having them both, you know, take both of those sorts of different tracks of learning where they may have come in for one reason, but they say, oh, they also have a reading program, and I want to be involved in that too.
Absolutely. So we have, we recently opened, last year we opened two family opportunity centers, one in Lockport and one in Salamanca in Cattaraugus County. And those are both kind of drop-in centers. We have a number of different programming opportunities. Families will come in for one thing, and before you know it, they're signed up and registered to take all sorts of programming. They'll come to story time. We have events. Sometimes we open an event registration portal, and it signs up. It fills up, and we're full. We can't have any more families who attend. It's really disappointing to say to people, I'm sorry, but you and your children can't come to story time because we don't have any more slots. And we have a lot of times, you know, families will come for a parenting program and end up taking Ready, Set, Read or coming down to story time or vice versa. So it's a lot of program sharing amongst our program coordinators.
Is there a cost for these programs for families to get involved with? I would assume with schools it might be a little bit of a different way that you're doing what you do. But, you know, talk a little bit about how people can take advantage of these things.
Sure. So all of our programs cost something, but never to the participant. So, you know, if we have, for instance, our Families in Transition program, it's always free for the participants to take, but we are funded through different foundations, the United Way, different government entities. So There's definitely a cost for the programs, but not for the participants to participate. So, for instance, Ready, Set, Read, when we run that, that is a free for every participant. Families who come into Story Time, that's a free event sponsored by M&T Bank Foundation, Employer Services Corporation, the Children's Foundation. It's a number of different partners that fund the programming. So, but for the participants, it's always free. The only time that it may cost something for the participant is if we were to run like a professional development opportunity that wasn't linked to a different funder. So occasionally we'll put out, our poverty simulator, our differentiated family engagement workshop models. And if people want to participate and it's not available through their school district or their community organization that they work for, we'll open that up for them to pay to join the session.
Outside of the knowledge that families will get with the Ready, Set, Read program, are there any other things that they walk away from through the program?
Sure. So, aside from the actual outcomes of the program, a lot of times we have incentives that we can offer. We offer books as, one of the incentives for families to participate. And a lot of times families stay connected with the people who they're in the workshops with. So you'll see, people exchanging phone numbers and texting. And, if you're in week three of a series, sometimes if you're listening, people will come in and be like, oh, it was so nice to see you at the park the other day. It was, great to meet up outside of the group. So, kind of that friendship, those friendships and camaraderie and a little bit of a parent support group, right? Because parenting is not always easy. It's hard and it's exhausting work. The most rewarding work you'll ever do, but it's still hard. And it's nice to have families that you can kind of, rely on and talk to and utilize each other for support.
So it sounds kind of like building a community within a community.
Absolutely. The village, right? Building our village. It takes a village to raise a child. And when you've got good, kind, loving people in your corner, that you're going to be much more, able to raise your children successfully.
So is there a volunteer basis or a component of EPIC? I know that you obviously have business folks and the people who are coordinating all these programs. How does volunteerism work?
So we love volunteers for Story Time and for Ready, Set, Read. So Story Time, we have, a facilitator, a program coordinator who's down there kind of running it all, but we could always use volunteers to come down and register. We're always looking for people to be guest readers. We have, 10 slots each summer for Canal Side and then other, the other Story Times that we run as well. So we're always interested in people who want to come down and read or, just help out at the event. So we have supplies that we distribute. So when kids come down to Story Time, we try to give them the supplies so they can take home and recreate the activities when we have funding for that. We love to give the kids a book, the book that we're reading primarily. Again, that's when we have funding for that. We're always looking for donations of kids' books, people to purchase the books so that we can give them to the kids to take home. Giving a kid a book can be a really incredibly moving experience, as you may well know. I'll never forget the day we were at Rich Products for a health fair, and we had a table filled with used and new books. And a little boy who was probably 4 years old came up to me and said, "Could I get a book?" And I said, "Of course you can." I said, "Which one do you want?" He said, "I want a brand new one because I've never had my own brand new book."
Hmm.
And with tears in my eyes, I said, "Come on, let's pick out whichever book you'd like." So, those are the kinds of things that you create a memory for a child that will last a lifetime. And then for our Ready, Set, Read program, we definitely love to have volunteers. If you've got 10, 12 kids in a room of a couple of different ages, it's always good to have, folks in the room to help support that kind of center learning journey for the children and support the staff.
You hit on something that we hear a lot from folks who have our Inchy Bookworms in their schools or organizations about the ownership of that book when it becomes theirs and they get to walk away with it. They don't have to return it. You know, you just mentioned a little boy who wants a new book because he's never had one, and he now he knows that that's his. Mm-hmm. It kind of hits on the same point that I made before we were doing this interview, that there's skin in the game then. Now this little boy has a book. It's his responsibility to take care of that, but it's also his responsibility to help nurture his own learning experience.
For sure. Kids love to learn, you know, and not all kids learn to read easily. But when you do things like that, giving kids books that they're interested in, giving them things that they're interested in reading, you know, you can open up a whole world to that child.
Now, does the reading program run all year round? I know you mentioned some of the activities that are a little bit more generated towards summer months. Okay. But is it a 12-month process with both of the reading programs that you offer?
So Ready, Set, Read, we run outside, but we do run them inside mm-hmm. as well. So that just depends on funding. And the same thing with Ready, Set, Read. That's a year-long program. So and we can do that program any place, right? We can do it at a library. We can do it at a community center. We can do it just about any place that has the space for, you know, groups of parents and children. So,
and how far in advance do people really need to know that these programs are popping up and that they want to get involved right away so that they're not being unfortunately turned away when all the slots are taken?
Yeah. So you can always call Epic at any point in time, and we'll start a registration list, you know, as early as people are calling for it. You know, a lot of times what's really good about that is if we say we don't have a program or we don't have funding for a program, you know, in the current slot, but we've got 15 people who are registered. That's we say to our funders, you know, we've got a group of families who are really interested in this. You know, would you be interested in supporting it? You know, literacy is certainly one of the most incredibly important things that we do as a society to help support our children's growth and development and our future, because they will be taking care of us when we're up there.
Hopefully.
You know, so those are the kinds of things that foundations, you know, like to support, businesses like to support. So we'll take a group of parents to a business and say, hey, do you want to support this great literacy program for 15 families? You know, you could have the ability to impact, if every family has, you know, two children on average, right? You're impacting 30 children by providing programming for 15 parents. So,
what are the challenges that you face here in Western New York, where you have very diverse communities from Niagara County, Erie County, down into Cattaraugus County? Obviously, the Western New York area is comprised of all that. A lot of the activities can be centered around the city areas. What are the challenges of meeting the needs of those folks in the cities and combining that with your efforts in the more rural areas?
Sure. So there's a couple of different things. So, you know, transportation seems to always be the biggest issue that comes up regardless of where we're at, right? You know, even in the city, think about Buffalo in the middle of winter. If you ever had to take a bus with a couple of different bus stops, we are not great at cleaning the snow out of bus stops. And you've got your two kids that you're carrying with you. So transportation, you know, is certainly an issue in the city. In rural communities, a lot of times, you know, there's a good number of families who don't own their own vehicle, don't own a car, and public transportation is non-existent. Ubers and taxis are non-existent in some of these areas. So transportation is always a big, you know, a big thing. The virtual programming has changed that a little bit, but when you think of some of these rural communities, and when you think of some areas of the city, internet connection is not consistent, if it's available at all. There's a number of areas. I will tell you where we are in, you know, the Broadway Fillmore district. You know, if you're walking around, you can't use your cell phone because there's no cell phone coverage there. So, you know, you think about that through the pandemic, what families went through trying to connect their kids for this online learning, and it was almost impossible. I knew a family who lived in Eden who had no internet connection. So, you know, that's pretty close to the city, a suburban area near a large major city. with no internet access. So, you know, those are certainly some of the things. Then you take families who have, you know, lots of challenges. Either they work two jobs, right? How do you fit in going to do programs in between your two jobs and taking care of your family? You know, those are the kinds of things that definitely pose challenges for families. And then I would say on the, you know, the funding side, we don't always have funding available to provide programs. We have a really excellent, generous community here in Western New York. We've got, you know, we've got a good number of strong foundations who support the community and through a number of initiatives. You've got a really strong business community who does the same, but there's a lot of need. So there isn't always necessarily all of the money to go around to all of the organizations. So, you know, funding is you know, certainly something that we're constantly looking for to provide programs.
You know, speaking of funding, do you have any capstone or keystone events throughout the year to help, you know, bring in a little bit more than the funding that you already have in place?
Yeah, so unrestricted giving is so important for nonprofits like ours. You know, it really, government funding does not typically cover all of the expenses. A lot of times foundation funding and different funding sources don't cover salaries. And we have to pay our people, right? Because they have mortgages and children that they're taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So unrestricted giving really goes to support all of the things that are unfunded with an organization. And so we have four key events that we do each year. The first is a St. Patrick's Day event down at the mansion. It's a beautiful place to come and watch the parade and the elegance of the you know, the mansion next to the fireplace. We have food and drinks and entertainment. We have a guy who comes in and plays the bagpipes. It's the most incredible experience. We have the Clonacara dance. Actually, they have a new name. But at any rate, they come in and do Irish dancing, which is really incredible to watch. So that event obviously is on the day of the parade every year, right around March 17th. We have a happy hour that is sponsored by Patrick's Rooftop. So they provide this great happy hour. It's called the 3-2-1. So it's 3 hours, two bars. They're XYZ bar on the first floor and then Patrick's Rooftop. And they give us $1 for every drink that we sell. So every, you know, we try to do that every year in June, July-ish, when it's really nice weather to sit out on the rooftop, hopefully. And, you know, we get the proceeds from that. Then we have each year in August, we have an invite-only happy hour event. So it's a free event. We kind of bounce around a little bit. This year it's going to be at the Wanaka Country Club. That's invitation only for people who have either donated to us in the past or have a strong interest in the organization. We have a short little kind of presentation, and it's a really nice opportunity to learn more about us. And then each year at the end of September, early October, we do a baby expo. So that is, this year it's going to be at the Buffalo Science Museum. We have a number of different vendors from the community, both nonprofit and for-profit organizations and businesses who come and, you know, provide different raffle items and information about, you know, a variety of topics related to having a baby or a toddler. And we have different presentations. This year we're going to have Touch a Truck. We're bringing back the very popular fashion show, children's and expectant moms fashion show.
Do the kids get involved in that?
Yeah. So,
My daughter's got to hear about that. Oh my goodness.
Oh, it is. It's really a lot of fun. Nothing cuter than little boys and girls walking down the runway. you know, that is a free event to attend. We're always looking for sponsorships for that and vendors to come and, you know, support the event. So that's a really great opportunity for families in the community to learn about all of the different resources. Because I will tell you, you know, Epic is doing great work. I love this organization. I love the people who work at Epic, and they work so tirelessly supporting families in Western New York. I love our partners who are doing good things and the families that we serve. And we are really lucky to be part of a rich community who are doing so many things, so much good work for this community. So
it's funny to say that because, I mean, for all the flaws that every community has, we can always come back and say, you know, Western New York truly has one of the strongest backbones that I've seen, and in the other places that I've lived around the country, that I always look back whenever I'm gone, even if it's just on a vacation, saying, you know what, that town gets behind everything that they really believe in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So where do people find more information if they're interested in programs or perhaps even volunteering or getting involved in some of the events that you just talked about?
Excellent. Excellent. We would love that. So we have a website, www.epicforchildren, E-P-I-C-F-O-R, and children spelled out, .org. You can call us at 716-332-4100. You can email us at hero@epicforchildren.org. Or connect with us on social media. We really love for people to share and engage with our posts on social media, obviously. You know, the more people engage with your social media, the more it gets shared, and the more that people know and hear about the different programs and, you know, the different pieces of information that we share. And we share a lot of things from other organizations. So not just, you know, Epic stuff. We love to be able to share and provide families with all of the resources that are available in the community.
Well, Tara, it's been a pleasure having you here. Thanks for the great work you're doing for the community. And thanks for taking a little time to be here with us on The Reading Revolution.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
For more information about The Reading Revolution, please visit bookvending.com. If you would like to contact us or would like to suggest a guest, drop us a line at readingrevolutionpod@gmail.com. The Reading Revolution is hosted by Josh Gregory, with technical direction from Thomas Crane and David Gagan. The podcast is produced by Jake Blumberg and Connor Russo. The executive producer is Jay Blumberg. Thanks again for watching and listening. We'll see you here again on The Reading Revolution, where literacy matters.